Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. I also want to thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning and for all that has been going on in my life. I can truly give Him praise and honor. Now, today's topic is a very interesting topic. It's one that is basically very personal, very sensitive. It lacks a lot of knowledge, but we need more information and resources to have available. Now, many may not be aware, but May is actually Mental Health Awareness Month. Now, since 1949, Mental Health America and other affiliates across the country have led the observance of May is the month to, that they chose for Mental Health Month by reaching millions of people through the media. They've had local events and screenings. There are also other organizations that have been spreading the word that mental health is something that everyone should care about. And by using May as Mental Health Month, there's a lot of information out there, a lot of tools, a lot of kits, because what they want to do is they want to get the word out so that more individuals can either recognize it, be aware of it, know what to do about it, especially if it is affecting them, their loved one, or their children. So in honor of May being the month of mental health, today's topic is focused around gender and mental health. So I want to log on my guest that's going to be joining me on the air for this topic. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Hi, Jeanette. Good afternoon. I don't know if you can hear me.
I want to thank you for always being a trooper and willing to join me at the last minute. I do need to get way more organized than this. But then I start getting phone calls. I'll be running around like a chick with my head cut off. Stuff don't be working. But I thought about you with doing this topic for a lot of different reasons. And one of them is because we have so much on our plate, and we have a lot of stuff going on. When we just did the topic when we were talking about violence in our community, and yet there's still school shootings, there's still domestic violence going on in the home. There's still a lot of stuff that's occurring, even though we have individuals out there doing the work, putting the information out there, yet individuals are still lacking heat. It's like not in my home, not in my backyard. Yet we're seeing it every day. Now, with gender and mental health being our topic, and like I said, this month is the month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Mental health is a concern here in the United States and all over the world. And like I said, as a way to educate individuals and provide awareness of today's show, I chose the topic gender and mental health for a lot of different reasons. Because although there appear to be gender biases in treatment of psychological disorders already, when it comes to mental health-related diagnosis, there appears to be a difference between gender. Why is this of interest? Because mental illness is underdiagnosed by many doctors. Individuals also appear to be reluctant to seek professional help. And it's also indicated that nearly 20% of American population suffer from depression. We know that mental illness affects both men and women. However, men, for some reason, are less likely to talk about their symptoms, feelings, or seek professional help. Now, Amalia, tell the listeners who you are, and I know you're driving, so I'm just a background noise, but tell the listeners who you are, what you do, and a little information regarding this topic, because this is a powerful topic.
Well, my name is Amalia Lamb. I'm an MSW in Orange County, California. My background is in social work, master's in social work. I started social work in reunification of children. Then I moved on and had, I was working in an apartment building in Southern California, bringing social services to families that were in low-income apartment buildings, as well as seniors who are living in low-income apartment buildings. And after that, I joined the county, and I've been with the County of Orange for the last 10 years, primarily working with pregnant teenagers, so pregnant, parenting, and expecting teenagers. And when you contacted me about this topic, oh, and then I also, when I was getting my master's, when I was in graduate work, my focus was in military social work. So I switched sides of social work and went more on the corporate side, the political side, the social policy side of social work. And I was placed with Mayor Garcetti, where I was writing bills and creating the Office of Veteran Affairs that we have in Los Angeles now. So that's a little background of mine. I'm also in private practice, where we do group therapy with substance abuse, batterers, and also child abuse treatment. Mm-hmm. But when you contacted me about being on the air, I did take this class at UCI when I went to University of California, Irvine, for my undergrad work. And there was a psychology of gender was the name of the course. I don't remember much of undergraduate. It was many decades ago. But this was one of the classes where I think I began to see how gender is so important. And at the time, I was actually a biology major. So there is a difference between what our sex is, which is male or female, and what our gender is, which is more, it's more fluid. So now we have, now 20 years later, after I've taken that course, we have this gender fluidity. And, you know, your sex is what's your biological, but gender is what the cultural constraint is, what your gender is. So I think I always like to start at the beginning with biology as to why we do what we do. And so today we're talking about gender, and we have to keep in mind that gender and sex are two very different things. Sex is our biological part, and gender is how our culture, how we react to the culture and the stigma that's put on us because of our sex.
Now, you know, Amalia, and it's funny because we've tried to study this topic from a lot of different ways. You know, they try to look at it to socioeconomic base. They try to look at it in regard to race, color, creed. But now that we're talking about gender, and even school teachers are very finding it very difficult when we look at a young male versus a young female when it comes to different types of mental health issues. Now, mental health is kind of going into the same area, I want to say, in regard to the individual having an illness. Because when we're looking at even just hyperthyroidism, cancer, you know, kids that are autistic or have Asperger's, and we're going to go into some of these childhood pervasive developmental disorders next week because I want to focus on mental health in children. But just talking about even with adults in the gender role, I have some information, and it indicates that a study finds sex differences in mental illnesses. Men are more likely to develop substance abuse, antisocial problems, and women are more likely to develop anxiety and depression. And this came from, the study was done several years ago, and it was in Washington, and it indicates when it comes to mental illness, the sexes are different. Women are more likely, like I said, to be diagnosed with anxiety and depression, while men tend towards substance abuse and antisocial disorders. Now, when they did this study and they looked at the prevalence in regards to gender of different types of common mental illnesses, the researchers also found that women with anxiety disorder are more likely to internalize emotions, which typically result in withdrawal, loneliness, and depression, while men, on the other hand, are more likely to externalize emotions, which leads to aggression, impulsiveness, or cohesiveness and non-compliant behavior. Now, sometimes we wonder, you know, even being a therapist and our clients start acting out on their behavior, we look at their behaviors as far as if a person is non-compliant, are they depressed? Are they anxious? Are they nervous? A lot of times we miss things. And we don't want to stereotype and just blame it on that, but this is just some of the things that we're looking at. Now, Amalia, when they were doing this study, they did a study on, it was 43,093 U.S. residents, 18 and older, and of those, 57% women and 56.9% were Caucasian, 19.3% was Hispanic or Latino, and 19.1% were African American, and 3.1% were Asian, Native Hawaiian, or Pacific Islander, and 1.6% were American Indian or Native Alaskan. So they tried to touch as much as they possibly could based on the U.S. Census report, but they found supporting information that focused on prevention and treatment efforts, too. One of the things they said in the study was, in women, treatment might focus on coping and cognitive skills to help prevent the rumination of developing into clinical significance of depression and anxiety. But men in treatment for impulsive behaviors might focus on rewarding planned actions and shaping aggressive tendencies into non-destructive behaviors. And I find that interesting, Amalia, especially when we look at individuals that are in the 52-week Batterers Intervention Program or clients that are coming into the program for treatment of drug and alcohol addiction. What do you think in regards to that? What is your input in regards to that?
Boy, you know, it's kind of when you look at the reasons that women seek mental health assistance, when they seek therapy or they seek counseling, you have to look at also all the reasons. I mean, I think statistically women just have more mental health illness because of the whole internalizing where you withdraw and just withdraw. We're human. We're human creatures that need to be, we're social creatures. So, of course, when you're withdrawing and you're isolating yourself, that goes against our human, our genetics, our, what we are supposed to do. It's one of our things. So, and I think also because we kind of look at the aggression, because it's more prevalent in men, then we also push it towards men. And we reward them for not being aggressors. When and the fact is that none of us should be aggressive. So, but I do see why that would happen, and that's because men are generally, stereotypically, statistically, more aggressive than women. Also, when we go back to our biology, the testosterone and the estrogen also could be a factor in that. And then when we have our childhood traumas, the way that our nurture versus nature, we look at all of that, then it just makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
We would want to reward and shape our aggression.
And, you know, and it's interesting, Amalia, because, like I said, a lot of times we don't realize that because we look at boys automatically going to be aggressive, meaning the male species, but now we're finding it, too, that some females are very aggressive also. Now, I have to admit, it came from what they consider the WHO, which is the WHO, and it talks about gender and women's mental health. And the gender disparity and mental health, these are the facts. Mental health is associated with a significant burden of morbidity and disability because there were a lot of individuals, and me being a licensed therapist, I get so many phone calls with, you know, the first thing, I always want to know what the presenting issue is just to make sure we're going to be a fit for therapy. And there's so many calls for depression, anxiety. And I know we're living in a world today where there's a lot going on in our society. There's a lot going on in regards to sometimes adjustment disorders and kids are getting older. You know, individuals are dealing with a whole lot of stuff that they are really having difficulties not only with their emotion but also understanding or coming to terms of, do I have a mental health issue or if it's something that I could deal with? Is it hereditary? Is it situational? What is this about? Now, they indicate that lifetime prevalence rates for any type of psychological disorder are higher than previous cause. There are also an increasing in recent cohort and affects nearly half the population. Now, despite being common, like I said earlier, mental illness is often underdiagnosed by doctors. Less than half of those who meet the diagnostic criteria for psychological disorders are identified by doctors, but yet a lot of times individuals will go to their general practitioner. I get phone calls sometimes from them not knowing who administer medications, and it's very interesting, especially if the individual already have an addictive personality, addictive spirit, a history of addiction, and they're seeking these different types of medications. Now, patients are sometimes appear reluctant to seek professional help because only 2 in every 5 people experiencing a mood, anxiety, or substance abuse disorder seeking assistance in 1 year of the onset of disorder. Now, overall rates of psychiatric disorders are also identical for men and women, but striking gender differences are found in the pattern in regards to the illnesses. Now, again, it goes back to why gender? Gender is a critical determinant of mental health and mental illness, and the morbidity associated with mental illnesses has received substantially more attention than gender-specific determinants and mechanisms that promote, protect mental health, and foster resilience, stress, and adversity. Meaning, sometimes when a person says that I'm depressed, if there's been a death in the family, okay, of course a person's going to be, they're going to, you know, have certain emotions.
Right.
If, you know, the same is true as with anxiety. Now, gender determines the differential power and control over men and women that they have over their socioeconomic determinants of their mental health and lives, their social position, and treatment in society, and their susceptibility and exposure to specific mental health risks. Now, when we start talking about the different types of disorders and things of that nature and the symptoms which we can go into, and like I said, I want to say again that depression is not only the most common women's mental health problem, but may also be more persistent in women than men. And more research is still needed. And a lot of times I want to say, Amalia, because we look at depression in men. When men get depressed, men have a higher suicide rate than females, especially when it comes to depression. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that goes back to our gender roles. And I think women, we have more of a social structure, a social support. So when we feel upset or anxious, we have our girlfriends that we call up, or you know, we go for brunch, or we do all that. And I think men, because of our, you know, just our gender stereotypes, they're not more apt to look toward, seek out that social support. They either shrug it off, tell themselves to get over it. And that's also one of our gender roles. Our gender substructs that we have in society.
Now, listeners, if you want to call in because you have any questions for myself or Amalia Lamb, give us a call at 516-387-1914. Again, 516-387-1914. Now, Amalia, I want to transition a little bit because even though, like I said, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, so, you know, people are providing information as far as what constitutes mental health, mental illness, mental wellness, because a lot of times individuals go through a lot of different stuff when they're dealing with their emotions. But when it impairs your level of functioning, when it's to the point where you can't get out of the bed or, you know, your anxiety is off. Now, we're not talking about just schizophrenia or a lot of the other different types of severe mental health issues. But one of the things I want to talk about a little bit is the lifetime prevalence rate for alcohol dependence, which is another common disorder, is more than twice as high in men than women. And a lot of times we look at addiction and we're seeing a rate increase in opiate addiction, a rate increase in drug and alcohol addiction. But we're finding that the alcohol is higher in men than women. And I remember when I was a kid growing up, my mother used to say the one thing she couldn't stand to see was a drunk female. Because even a drunk female, you know, you see the depression, the behavior, versus when a male is under the influence of alcohol. Now, they indicate that in developed countries, approximately one in five men and 1 in 12 women develop alcohol dependence during their lives. But men, like I said, are more than 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder. Now, you indicated something about withdrawing and isolating yourself. And a lot of times they think that women are antisocial, but it's funny that men fall more into that characteristic of antisocial personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
What is your comments in regards to that, Amalia?
Well, I think men, this is just me, I don't know statistically or if there's any research, but I think men tend to take some time out when it becomes just too overwhelming. They just physically shut down, take time to themselves, go be alone, isolate, work out, look for all of those coping mechanisms that are healthy. And so they do withdraw in that. But in regards to anxiety and depression, that's when the women, there's a prevalent rate in anxiety and depression in women because they are withdrawing, which then from social activities, which then causes the depression. And what I tell folks and when I see them is, there's a difference between sadness and depression. Like, I feel sad because I'm thinking of something and that's making me sad. Depression is when you just wake up sad and you have no idea why you're sad. And that sadness lingers and it's with you for more than 2 weeks. And that point, and that's when we have to look at this as not just being sad. I think also women, we have our hormones as well. So we have our postpartum or postnatal depression. And that's a whole nother topic, I think, because there's so much pressure on being a perfect mother, a perfect wife, having a perfect body. And when you're delivering a baby, all your hormones are kind of trying to get back to what normal is for you. Then we see a lot of incidents in postpartum depression. I think you mentioned life expectancy. And I think also because of, we know women tend to live longer than men. So even though men are having this longer, lifelong battles with alcoholism and substance abuse, women are living longer. So they're also depressed longer. And then if you look at older adults and just, it's another change where you're losing control of your body, literally, because you're losing your eyesight, you're losing your taste buds. You can't reach things. You can't walk. You have these illnesses that are coming. And then you're losing friends and you're losing maybe children have moved away. You're finding yourself alone. And so that also attributes to the depression in our older folks and in our older adult years. So I just think that statistically women just have a lot more things going on, a lot more life changes from whether it's, trauma as a childhood trauma, which, I don't know what the rate is. It used to be 7 out of 10 women have been sexually abused. I don't know what it is, what it stands at now. So we start off with our childhood trauma, and then we go into the dating scene and how difficult that is or not is for some, and then marital stress and children's stress and having a career at the same time, balancing household chores along with a professional responsibilities. And then we move into postpartum, and then later on we have our life expectancy. But it sounds all grim now that I'm thinking about it as a woman. I'm like, oh, man.
I know. A lot of times individuals don't realize that even the breakup of relationship, the effect on women and men in their mental health
way different.
You're talking about that. Now, I have some information, and even though we're talking about gender, but also the gender biases. Now, gender bias is a current treatment of psychological disorders, as doctors are more likely to diagnose depression in women compared to men. Because, like you said, they'll look at a man and be like, you know what, suck it up, get over it. And a lot of times, men don't want to say anything in regards to what somebody just sent me a topic saying what's going on with the show. Okay, Joanne, I don't know what you mean, but we are on live now, so hopefully we are on.
I'm probably near you. I'm probably near you because I just got off the 76. I'm in Oceanside right now. We're probably just passing.
Should have just stopped by my office then. I'm trying to find her text because she said what's going on with the show, and it looked like the show got me on.
She sent me a text message.
So, I don't know. I have no idea. Hopefully it's on. She said she can't log on.
Oh, no.
Okay. Got to click on the link. I don't know what's going on. You know what? I had difficulties trying to call in because the numbers didn't pop up. No, she just did that. Now my whole computer just clicked off. Okay. Wow. You know what, girl? I don't know what be going on, but it's okay. All right. So getting back to what we were talking about in regards to doctors are more likely to diagnose women with depression compared to men.
Right.
Because a lot of times they don't know what to do when they're a depressed man. Now, female gender is significantly a predictor in being prescribed mood-altering psychotropic drugs too, Amalia, because the gender differences exist in patterns of seeking assistance for psychological disorder, where women are more likely to seek help and disclose mental health problems to their primary health care physicians, while men are more likely to specialize in regard to mental health care or the principal cause of using, of basically, we're talking about inpatient. Because a lot of times men don't want to say anything. And the gender stereotypes brought in the opponents to emotional problems in women and alcohol problems in men appear to reinforce that social stigma and constrained help in along stereotypical lines. Now, we need to do better because despite the differences, most women and men experiencing emotional distress and psychological disorders are neither identified or treated by their doctor. We know that violence and mental health problems are also poorly identified, where women are reluctant to disclose a history of violent victimization unless the physician asks them directly, and men kind of minimize their symptoms because they don't want to look as if they are overly aggressive. Now, again, if you want to call in and join in on a conversation, give me a call at 516-387-1914. Because one of the things is ending the silence, breaking this taboo. You know, I was watching the news this morning, Amalia, and I think it was a young lady that was on American Idol, and she was basically talking about a moment of silence. She was like, I'm tired of having a moment of silence. Something really needs to be done. Because we're at this point where we can't continue to point our fingers and say, hi, this person is depressed. Hi, this person is bipolar. This person is this. And people are not doing anything about it. Now, even though we're talking about gender and mental health, sometimes with men, a lot of women are in relationships and dating men that may be suffering from depression, anxiety, you know, some type of mental health issue, and they may be walking on eggshells in regards to how to approach that person by saying, hey, maybe you might want to go talk to somebody. What advice would you give a person, Amalia, as a therapist, when someone is coming to you saying, you know, my significant other, the guy that I'm dating, is struggling with these symptoms, but yet he don't know what to do? What would be some advice?
Well, I think always psychosocial education, a psychoeducation is where to begin. So if we look at the way that stress manifests itself in our bodies, you know, our heart rate goes up, our blood pressure goes up, cortisol goes up. We also have irritability. I'm trying to think, you know, and driving at the same time. I'm trying to think of all the different parasympathetic factors that we have. So stress manifests itself, and so does depression, anxiety, and other things. And I also believe that that's another reason why men are not diagnosed at the rates that women are, because, you know, they'll go to their doctor because of, I don't know, their arm is tingling or their jaw is stressed out or their heart rate is higher. And it could be stress rate. I'm not saying always. There could be a biological reason for all of that. But I do believe that we sometimes try to treat what our body is doing in a response to the stress and anxiety and the depression, or we just play it off as like, oh, I'm just stressed out, when it could be an underlying mental health issue. So I would start with some psychoed on what mental health is, what is normal and not normal, quote unquote, because we all have what's normal for us and what's not normal for us. So, you know, if there is a life altering event, then sadness is part of a life altering event. And when you have multiples, you know, if you think of when your stages of life, so you're an early adult, you're moving out of your parents' house, you have a new school, new set of friends, you're also experimenting with a lot of things, and you know, between 18 and 23. So all of these are life factors. And so those are things that we also have to remember, is that we have to figure out if it is a true depression or if it's stress related to these changing things in our life. But I would start off with some psychoed for her significant other, hers or his. significant other, and see use the tools that we have. You know, our psychological tools that we have in psychology.
Got you. And one of the things, Amalia, is trying to normalize the behavior by telling a person that, you know, people have one thinking people are crazy. People are not crazy.
Right.
Their behavior may be out of control. They may have a chemical imbalance. It could be something that is hereditary. It could be something that's situational. But by that same token, we have to realize that not only is it important for women to seek professional help, but men matter too. You know, because a lot of times we got to get more men. It's like men didn't want to go to the doctor to get physicals or checkups, and then men start having prostate cancer. And then find out that a woman can have prostate cancer, but, you know, they can be diagnosed where they may have some form of cancer. When I said that, I thought about when the show Madea, when the man said Madea got a prostate. I had to watch myself on that one. I was like, let me not misspeak. So, but if they told it, you know, a woman can also suffer from some form of colon cancer. But so with gender and mental health, men do matter too. Now, a lot of times we ignore symptoms. And when we're talking about ignoring, when you ignore certain things, it will fester. And like I said earlier, men have a significantly higher rate of suicide, substance use disorder, attention deficit disorder, even though, indeed, men make up over 75% of the suicides in other countries, especially in Europe and some in the United States. We need to look at that in order to save people's lives. Because if you don't know what you're looking at, you may not know how to lead the person in the right direction to try to get some help. You know, it's kind of like I remember they used to say, boys don't cry, or you're not depressed. You're not. But then when they go off, they go off. And like I said, and we're finding that to be true when we're talking about mental health and aggression and substance use, and we really need to do better by understanding what this gender discrepancy is between gender and mental health.
Right. I think we didn't really mention it, but there's also self-medication. So I think you know, it's hard to also listen to while we're driving, but I do remember that you did touch on the substance abuse and alcoholism and greater rates in men. And it could also be attributed to just self-medication. With, you know, most of our mental disorders, I'm sorry, I'm like switching lanes. Their onsets are at a younger age where we are not as educated on what is mental health. So I do believe that may also attribute to the reasons why we have these increased rates in substance abuse and alcoholism and men and aggression. You know, we're just trying to calm the demons in our heads and don't know how. So naturally you're also in this adolescent development where you're experimenting and have friends that are experimenting, and it's just a very volatile combination that sets you up for a lifelong addiction to not only addiction to substances and alcohol, but also an addiction to that anger, to that feeling that we have when we are enraged. And that also begins at an early age when we're trying to self-medicate because of whatever trauma.
And that's because that's part of it when we're talking about the substance use and abuse is part of it is the self-medication. Now, someone just sent me a text message. It says, what are some familiar habits we can look for in this type of person? We're talking about depression, first of all, because we're talking about gender. When you're talking about symptoms of depression, there's quite a few. One of them is, like Amalia was talking about, the sadness, the loss of interest, the not wanting to wake up, the not wanting to bathe, shower. That's when you know that they're taking depression to a whole other level. But when a person with suicidality, and we're talking about suicide risk in men is higher than in women, you know, job loss, of a relationship, if there's a family history of some type of mental disorder. Some individuals, some of the disorders that we're overlooking is like schizophrenia, you know, bipolar. Now, it's interesting, Amalia, I'm going to jump to just this one, too, with PTSD. Did you know that worldwide women, more women are affected by PTSD than men? But yet, a lot of times, women don't understand when their significant other maybe suffer from PTSD, but women are more affected by it. And largely because women are exposed to more sexual violence, and the risk of developing PTSD after any traumatic event is 20.4% for women and 8.1% for men. When we talk about the military, we look at PTSD, and people handle it differently. When we're looking at first responders, because someone had asked me about doing a show in regard to first responders and PTSD, because a lot of PTSD is job-related based on what kind of job you have. So a lot of those different things play a role in what's considered mental health. So I hope that I answered that caller's question. Now, we talked a lot about...
I was just going to mention, I was going to mention that I don't think we've talked about body dysmorphia and eating disorders, which is another statistic that women have higher levels of body dysmorphia and eating disorders, which is also a
gender
gap.
Now, with eating disorders, eating disorders are more common in women than in men, but men can also have eating disorder, which can be anorexia nervosa or bulimia, which has to do with the binging and purging. Now, young women are most likely to develop, you know, one of the eating disorders. 1.9% of women and 0.2% of men experience anorexia in any year. Now, between 0.05% and 1% of young women experience bulimia at any time of the any one time. Now, it's interesting you're talking about an eating disorder because when you see an eating disorder in a male, because we know that a lot of times it's more about power and control. Being kind of, it depends, like with sports. You know, we've had situations where individuals were on the weight, not the weight, what do you call it, the wrestling team, and they have to win a certain weight. They may starve themselves or, you know, being in a relationship breakup, not wanting to eat because they just slipped into depression. So we do have to be mindful of eating disorders. One of the things that was mentioned a little bit was dementia. 2/3 of people with dementia are women. Risk of dementia increases with age, and women have a higher life expectancy than men. Now, a lot of times, even on the news, when we see dementia, we see it more with men. You know, grandpa missing, daddy missing. You know, very seldom do you see that in women. Now, even though, like I said, we talked about anxiety, with women are twice as likely to experience anxiety disorder as men, but about 60% of people with phobias of excessive compulsive disorder are women. And phobias affect about 22 in 1,000 women in the UK compared to the 13 to 1,000 in men. Phobias is another issue. Look like I just lost Amalia. Her call just dropped, so hopefully she will call me back. Now, one of the things when we were talking about some of the areas, when we're talking about the difference in men and women, and we're talking about in regards to women are more likely to have been treated for a mental health issue problem than men, and that's because a woman will try to go to the doctor to try to get some help. And this is because when asked, women are more likely to report symptoms of common mental health problems. We know that depression is more common in women than men. We also know that 1 in 4 women will require treatment for depression at some time in their life compared to 1 in 10 men. The reasons for this, we know this is unclear, but there are thoughts to be due to both social and biological factors. It has also been suggested that depression in men have been underdiagnosed because they present to their general practitioner with different symptoms. For example, it can range from physical stress or other stress-related symptoms, and that's why a lot of times it can go undiagnosed. Now, we talked a little bit about men are more likely to have an alcohol or drug problem, and we find that in some cases because many of them may self-medicate. Now, the differences in the extent of mental health problems affect women and men equally. but some are more common among women, and abuse is often a factor in women's mental health problems. Now, we know that treatment is sensitive. Amalia, we lost her. She's back. Okay. Amalia, you there?
I'm back.
Hello? Okay,
hi.
I saw that
I'm
I
back.
Lost you. Now, I was still talking about the differences to the extent of mental health, and you mentioned a little bit about women as guardian of family health, meaning it is essential that women look after their mental health, although busy lifestyles is very important, and that makes it difficult. We also know women as careers. A lot of times people don't realize that women that have high-ranking positions that are owners of companies, a lot of women suffer from some type of anxiety or depression, especially, you know, whether they care for their children, their partners, their parents, or other relatives or friends. Women are... carers are often likely to suffer from anxiety and depression in the general population. And a lot of times individuals don't realize that. Talking about social support, you mentioned that a little bit, how women friendships with other women help protect their mental health. Because I know I'll get on the phone with Lisa in a heartbeat. You know, I'm like, Lisa.
Yeah.
Every time I do that, or I do it with Tisha, and then sometimes I drive you crazy. Now, also talking about social factors, the effect on women's mental health include more women than men are the main care for their children, and they care for other dependents in their lives. We know women, they either multitask or they juggle multiple roles. Women are overrepresented in low-income, low-status jobs, which also can lead to a lot of mental health problems, poverty, physical and sexual abuse. You talked about that. And that we know that mental health problems affected more women than men. But, you know, we've had people joke around talking about men and say that my wife is bipolar or my wife is this, but sometimes they don't take accountability for their role, too. We talked a little bit about depression, the anxiety, dementia. What are some of the other things, Amalia? Let's talk a little bit about treatment, because treatment is a little different between men and women, too, because a lot of times men don't follow through on treatment.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think in traditional therapy, when you think therapy, you think psychotherapy, where you sit and you talk to someone, and you talk to someone, and you go back and you talk to someone, and, you know, it's a couple of weeks until you get something going while talking to someone. And I think that if you're not familiar with what therapy looks like and what to expect out of therapy, then you get frustrated with therapy. And I think that might be a reason why men are fixers and doers. You know, I think that's genetically inbred in men, that they are here to fix a problem, and get that problem fixed. Not to think about how can I fix this problem differently, or maybe I should ask my friend about how to fix this problem, or maybe I should do this. It's just let's get it done. I do remember that from the psychology of gender, that the men are fixers. And so when you're in therapy, I think a lot of participants don't understand that the first couple of weeks of therapy is just to get to know each other, to engage, to make sure that you and your therapist are someone who like each other. I think that, I mean, that's very detrimental when you don't have a therapist that you don't like. And I have had people in my practice where they just did not feel comfortable with their previous therapist, and they weren't able to talk to them. And they were also like, you know, just go talk to you, just listen, and nothing was getting done. Not knowing that that is part of the therapy, is just getting it out of your body and out, literally out, whatever your thoughts are. So I don't know what the statistics are in regards to psychotherapy versus other interventions, but I do know that the way that psychology is moving and interventions and social work is that we're moving away from that traditional laying on a couch, not looking at your therapist as they're just jotting away notes, and we're being more interactive in therapy. So, you know, I believe we did a show on all the different types of therapies. We have equine therapy, we have play therapy, art therapy, we even do surfing therapy. I mean, there's a lot of other ways to solve our problems, to solve our, you know, our need for mental health. So,
one of the things, Amalia, I want to turn it a little bit, because when we talk about, like I said, women, we always expect for women to go to therapy, women to go get help,
right.
And I have some information, and this information talks about men's mental health, a silent crisis. And I found this on Psychology Today. And someone wrote an article, and his name is Rob Whitley. He's a PhD talking about men. And one of the things he says was they did an exploration of factors behind high rates of mental health problems in men. And it indicates that numerous researchers have recently stated that there's a silent crisis in men's mental health. And this is based on robust evidence that men have high rates of various mental health issues. These include, like I said, elevated rates in suicide, substance abuse, as well as low rates in mental health services use. Sadly, male gender often intersects with variables to produce even a higher rates in some subgroups. He talked about suicide. Even though men make up over 70% of suicide victims in the United States, with one man killing himself every 20 minutes. And not only just a one man killing himself, but sometimes men could be depressed, have PTSD, and they can go out and kill somebody else too. There's also been attributed to various factors, one due in massive decline in traditional male industries such as manufacturing, forestry, you know, having jobs that kind of can, you know, help individuals bond and connect, things of that nature. It also indicates that in the current economy, many men are finding it difficult to fulfill a breadwinner role, leaving them without a powerful sense of pride, purpose, and meaning in life. Now, I find that to be interesting, especially in some of the men that I've dated. And me looking at, wow, why are they so hard on themselves? Why are they, when a man don't feel like a man, that bothers that man, and that can cause a problem. Now, there's a very high rate have been observed in veterans, among American Indians, gay men, and a common factor among these groups may be perceived for rejection from mainstream society, leading to a strong feeling of alienation and isolation. And these factors are explored in one of the things that they did, and it was also looking at men struggling after divorce. Amalia, let's speak on that a little bit, because we got to get to the point to where we can get individuals connected with mental health services utilization, which I'm going to speak on a little bit. But let's talk about that a little bit. Like I said, relationships, divorce, not making enough money, you know, trying to be the breadwinner. Some of these things, when women, we miss those red flags when we're looking at mental health, when our man is coming home from being depressed. I remember watching, as I was just reading that and looking at that, Good Times. Every time when a husband would come home from work, he was so frustrated. We didn't think maybe he was suffering from depression or he could be having anxiety coming home, not knowing and not being able to feed his kids and his family. But these are some of the things that we also have to pay attention to. What do you think about that, Amalia?
My dad, you know, is the opposite, and I think it was his upbringing. He was actually brought up in an orphanage. So when my dad would come home, he would tell us, I'm not home yet. That was like our,
you know, he has a chance to run to your dad and greet him, and he would say, I'm not home yet. And my dad would actually take his time, because he really wasn't home yet. He would take his time to just whatever was happening during the day, take that time to himself. And my dad is a very, for those that know my father, he's a very passive guy. He's very balanced in that he's spiritual. All his needs are being met. So as an adult, looking back on the way my father is, because my father's not the masculine, stereotypical, like, macho guy, he did teach us all about meditation and spirituality. So I think that role model is what I grew up with a father that would take his time to make sure that he was emotionally invested or emotionally prepared to deal with four children.
Right. It is very, and that's what I do tell the women. And you're switching between my Bluetooth and my, I don't know.
Oh, no problem.
And so I think that we as women also have to look at that. But, you know, when you're so stressed out, you can't see outside your own. You can't see outside your own.
And that is
your
so true. You know, Molly, when you said it about my parents, I remember with my mom, my mother used to say she thought my dad was all that. Like, he think he all that. He think he this. He think he that. And I told my mom, I said, Mom, he suffers from depression. He has a low self-esteem. It was years before my mother realized that my father had any type of mental health issues because she didn't think so. But he was. Mm-hmm. That's why he isolated himself. That's why he didn't come around. That's why he did drugs. That's why he was going and attacking other people, becoming overly aggressive. Those are some of the mm-hmm. things that men really don't know how to go get help for. Now, with mental health services and special utilizations, like I said, we have 10 minutes left on the air. So if you want to call in and speak with myself, I am Jeanette Abney. I am a licensed therapist. I'm also the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction with office locations in Fullerton, the city of Fullerton, Garden Grove, Huntington Beach, California. And I'm also the owner of J.A. Precious, located in Oceanside. And I also work with another therapist, Dr. Lisa Romaine, out of her office in Menifee, California. So if you cannot reach or if I can't help you, you can still give me a call at my office location, which is 714-992-1677. We've indicated before the different types of services. We talked about EAP. You could call 211. You could call NAMI. But get some help. Because with mental health service utilizations, evidence suggests that men are significantly less likely to use mental health services in response to a mental health issue in comparison to women. This is especially so for African-Americans, Latinos, and Asian men who have much lower utilization rates than Caucasian men as well as women in general. In other words, talking about men who are suicidal or who have substance abuse problems are much more likely to suffer in silence, especially minority men. And it's kind of interesting because I used to think about the winos. When I was a kid, I'd see a wino on a corner, and I'd go talk to the wino, not realizing that the wino may have an addiction and a mental health okay. issue. And Molly, I'm probably one that got cussed out by winos many, many times. But this, I never forget a wino cuss me out. This is more attributed to stubbornness. Just stubbornness rooted in traditional American notions of masculinity that emphasize in regards to, you know, you don't need no help. However, other explanation is that formal mental health services are not finely attuned to men's needs, especially minority men. Indeed, these services tend to emphasize medication or talk therapy, but some research suggests that men prefer actions over words and face a stressful situation, meaning how are we going to take care of this right now, fix it right now. And a lot of times they don't want to be talking about it. And I'm going to tell you too, Amali, another barrier that I run into being a female therapist working with a male. A lot of times when a man start getting better, their significant other, their spouse gets mad because they want to know, why is this man connecting with you but not connecting with them? Because most women want to be fixers too. So if you know that your significant other is in therapy, don't bombard them with what you're talking about, what you're doing. Watch the progress, watch the growth, and accept it. Because sometimes people get used to people being a certain way. Now, solutions. What can be done to improve men's mental health? First and foremost, but men's mental health should be recognized as a social issue as much as a health issue, with attention paid to issues such as, like I said, unemployment, family disruption. Secondly, there should be more choices made in formal mental health systems, meaning with more male-tailored options that respond to men's unique needs. And I'm going to speak on that, Amalia, because I've been trying to work with my cousin, Cedric Boyd, trying to get pastors on board to do a man-to-man conference because men need people to talk to that's going to tell them the truth, that's going to guide them in the right directions, and they really need that. And thirdly, health departments at various levels of government should seek specific strategies to improve men's mental health with setting targets and goals based on recent research. And not only just research, but evidence-based, what's working, what's not working. And we got to be more open-minded. We can't keep cookie-cutting this because too many people are taking their lives. Too many individuals are, like I said, these school violence, domestic violence, drug and alcohol addiction. You know, I remember my mother told me one time, she said, baby, she said, you so busy trying to change the system, and the system is not designed for you to change the system. But we all play a role. We all have to be responsible and take accountability. We need to do something. Amalia, what do you think in regards to that? What are your thoughts about that?
I think you're just, you know, you're hitting all the hot topics that I've had so much going through my head. But especially with the health department, You know, I, as a case manager for Praying in Teens, I have zero support groups that I can refer my male fathers, teenage fathers, zero. There's no men support groups. There's no men counseling groups. There's no, just even a group therapy where all the single dads can get together. Actually, there was one I just remembered, Fristers. They just started it in Anaheim, California. It's the only one that they have. So I think also we're missing the programs. We're doing a huge disservice. We talk about how we want to help these fathers, and it's the father's fault because he left, but we're not doing anything. You know, as people who we're not doing anything to create an environment where men can come and freely talk about their day-to-day stressors, what their fears are, what their anxiety is, their frustrations with their job, with their coworkers. They just have it. I mean, just as much as we do, I think you and I were in this female dominant field, but you know, there is an opposite where they're in a male dominant field, and that's also stressful. So I mean, we need more resources,
Amalia, because even I remember several years ago, Dr. Lisa Romaine and I, we had connected with these two gentlemen in Riverside County, and they were talking about opening up shelters because even though domestic violence is on the rise, a lot of times, even with domestic violence, sometimes it's mutual combat. Even, and that's not to say that to minimize that women are victims of abuse, but men are victims of abuse too. But there are very few. In some places, zero shelters for men to go that are victim of domestic violence. So they suck it up, they deal with it, and then the police get called on them, and then now they are the perpetrator, and they're angry, and they don't know what to do, and we need to end the silence. And also with this emotional suppression, research finds that men may be conditioned to dismiss or repress emotions that are integral in recognizing and responding to mental health problems. You know, a lot of times men, when we talk about anger management groups, I like that the VA is also offering a lot of services for individuals in regards to anger management and helping them with things, but also with substance abuse and destructive health behaviors. And a lot of research in things, they were shocked to learn about the ways in which individuals have taken for granted something as major as a difference in an average age of death between men and women. You know, why are women living longer than men? What is going on? You know, I was listening to a preacher preach the other day, and he was talking about hypertension. And the first thing he said was, stay away from fast foods. I was like, you know, we need to learn to reduce our stress. We need to basically be aware of our drug and alcohol consumption, because I tell people all the time, alcohol is a drug. And we need to learn how to use our words and learn to express our emotions appropriately. And don't be afraid to get some help, whether you are a male or a female. Be honest when you are connecting with someone. Like I said, there's crisis hotlines. You can call 211. There is help out there, but you also want to make sure that you connect with the right help. And again, I did a show several months ago about suicide risk prevention. So you can log on to the show. You can listen to those shows. You can, you know, you want to make sure you are aware of the warning signs. Another thing, Amalia, health insurance is also an issue. In regards to individuals don't know how to tap into their resources, many individuals are still underinsured. A lot of times individuals are going for relationship issues, mental health counseling, but you can work on yourself first. Fix yourself before you can fix someone else. And also, the younger, if you are under 18, I hope that parents are listening to this show so that they can try to get their young youth some help, because I'm looking at an information in regards to why men, it says why men with mental health issues don't seek help, which is a lot of different reasons. Internet is great. Call, get some help. Let's do something to in the silence as it relates to mental health in regards to gender and mental health. Now, next week or next Monday, we're going to be talking about mental health in children because there's a lot of childhood disorders that are occurring in regards to RAD, which is reactive attachment disorders, OCD. I'm getting a lot of calls from parents telling me that their kid is depressed, kid is 2 and 3 years old, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to do something not only just in the month of May, but throughout the year to address mental health needs, symptoms, and become more aware and more courageous in regards to trying to help individuals get some help. Tomorrow I will be on the air with Dr. Pat Dannisdale from Higher Dominion Worship Center, and we're going to be talking about stewardship. So I want to thank you for joining me here for another episode at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. And until next week, remember, you got this. Thank you, Molly. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.